Well, what price forgiveness or redemption after horror at both an individual and community level? Look, I had a chance to sample just these qualities during a summer holiday highlight, a visit to Rwanda in Central Africa, a long-held dream of mine. My son and I went primarily to see the mountain gorillas in the wild, the big silverbacks. You might remember they were made memorable in the film Gorillas in the Mist about the late Diane Fossey. And they were magnificent, and I might post some pics on the Saturday Extra page. But it was the epic story of Rwanda and its people that really seduced us, how it's recovering from the horrors of a genocide that evolved from April 1994, 100 days of savagery that claimed about a million lives and left scars, emotional and physical, that are so hard to imagine. 25 years ago next year, and as I said earlier, remember, this was the place that claimed another casualty, our own late beloved Mark Colvin. This is where he first got sick. But it's impressive to see firsthand the Herculean efforts to stitch Rwanda back together again, now considered one of the countries really thriving in modern Africa. So it's a bit of a wonder. And I'll introduce you shortly to two Rwandans playing significant roles in their country's revival. But first, some audio of the time from Major General Roméo Dallaire, the Canadian commander of the UN peacekeeping force, who could not persuade world leaders to prevent the looming catastrophe.
I need food, medicine, and material for 2 million people, and I got to stockpile it now. Because, ladies and gentlemen, if I may say in conclusion, we're all late. We're already weeks and weeks late.
Now, that's Roméo Dallaire, who's gone on to give a lot of talks about his experience. The documentary's been made about him. He had terrible, still does, terrible post-traumatic stress syndrome because he saw things that people should never, never see. He's an extraordinary man, actually. But I would like to introduce you to another special man that whom I met when I was there. He's now a senator in the Rwandan parliament, Apollinaire Mushinzimana, and he's one of these people who's really putting Rwanda back on the map. Rwanda and Botswana are considered two of the real stars of the modern Africa. Apollinaire was actually away at the time studying during the genocide, but he's deeply involved in his country now. He and his family are very involved in the church, which didn't exactly cover itself in glory. And he's well aware of the possibilities of the nation and where it's still struggling. But I spoke to him first about what seemed to me to be, frankly, the miracle of recovery that I could see.
It's really a miracle. I mean, it's not just foreigners can really see there's a miracle. Ourselves, Rwandans, we really appreciate how far we have gone, how in terms of reconstruction of this country, because I mean 24 years ago it was down, and we have really done a lot in terms of reconstruction of infrastructure, of institutions, even reconstruction of the people. The people of Rwanda have now also, I think, they have not been left aside.
Well, that's the question, I suppose. Do you think that the hurt, that, I mean, look, honestly, it's unimaginable, hey? You know, a million people, 100 days of absolute horror. You wonder how people do move past that. Have they got over the hurt, the sort of pain of it?
Well, let's say the majority of the Rwandan people, let's say 90-95% of the people have now, they have turned the page of the past, and as I just told you, 70% of the Rwandans are aged under 25 years. So it's also a strength on which we are building to have a future which is not hampered by the horrific events of the past.
Do they want to know details of that past?
Well, it's yes and no. It's yes and no. And even for ourselves, adults, we do always discuss, should we tell our children all the details of what happened, or should we, do we let them really move forward and build a future of Rwanda? So it's a debate, but the choice today of the society, the choice of even of the government, is we should tell them the truth so that it doesn't happen in the future, so that if in the future there are problems, they can really help prevent any future horrific events.
And what's your own judgment in terms of your own children? I mean, what side have you come down on? Do you talk about it,
well,
or not?
Yeah. That's that's the dilemma. Let me tell you frankly, my own children are not aware of what happened.
Really?
My oldest child is aged 25 years now. Recently, I was surprised because my daughter, who is 21 years, told me that she was asked in France, where she was studying, to tell the whole history of genocide. And he said, which genocide? Which Rwanda? I don't know. Are you talking about my country, Rwanda? I don't know. So I was surprised. That means I don't know if is it good so that they don't know, but...
Well, it's the same in Cambodia. If you go to the young people of Cambodia, do not want to know about the Cambodian genocide and almost say, well, that was your problem. And I mean, I suppose all countries who've been through horrors have to debate. Well, South Africa had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, didn't they, in order to sort of move past. So everyone sort of laid their cards on the table. Have you done something like that?
Yeah, we've got also a National Commission on Reconciliation. But the work of that commission is really to show the people that we have the Rwandan identity, not ethnic divisions. So it's really tricky. Do we build the current national Rwandan identity? We are telling our people, we are Rwandans. But of course, the youngest ones always ask, oh, what happened? Who was a Hutu? Oh, my father. Oh, daddy, are you a Hutu? Are you a Tutsi? Which side were you? 25 years ago. So it's always tricky. But I'm happy that Rwanda has found a way of moving forward, of reconstructing itself, of building a certain social cohesion among its population, which does not refer anymore to the ethnic and so on. And as I told you, I'm very happy when I see people are getting married without looking at the ethnic background.
So is there quite a lot
other?
Of inter-ethnic marriage, is there?
Yeah, there's quite a lot. I mean, I don't have the numbers. No one will be counting because ethnic belongings are no longer an issue. No one will be looking at me and say, which ethnic are you? Which ethnic is your wife? And so on. We're not talking about that. We are talking about, let's be Rwandans.
Is it not done to even ask? Like, if I said to you, could you tell me what tribe you were? Would that be is that bad etiquette now?
It's bad etiquette, yeah. It's bad etiquette. We don't talk about it publicly. We want really to push the people to, not to forget, but to make sure that the future is no longer influenced by the ethnic backgrounds. It's not an easy task.
Not at all.
But I can say that the current government has managed to really push forward this agenda of reconciliation, which is the political reconciliation, but also that reconciliation is based on pragmatism. People are living together. If you have to survive together, if you have to depend on your neighbor, if you have to continue socializing with your neighbors. So the reconciliation is also made easy.
But it's was made easy. In the past, did you have Hutus in one area and Tutsis in another?
No.
We have always
people living like that.
So that didn't rescue.
That explains the million lives killed during only 100 days. Because people were being killed by their neighbors.
Oh.
They're being killed by their children, by their father-in-law and so on. So that explains
the disaster,
the enormous number, the big number of people killed during the genocide.
Okay.
You know, I mean, every single Rwandan who is aged above 25 has experienced, I mean, the killings in a way or another.
Mm.
So this is a very strong lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And then
to say never again.
Yeah, that's the issue of never again. But the issue of never again.
We have
children who have their parents in the prison for genocide.
Right.
So you can imagine a kind of resentment they have.
Mm.
They do always ask why my father is in prison for the last 20 years. Isn't it the problem? It's a problem.
Sure.
Yeah, it's tricky, but
But presumably they have to be beside it. Like that father may have slaughtered another child's parents
and so on.
And they're side
but
by side.
Many do not tell the truth. Some of them do not tell. He will not tell his kids that I'm in prison because of genocide. They may say, oh, I'm in prison because of injustice.
I see.
Yeah. And an element of reconciliation, which I think quite has worked well in Rwanda, is really justice.
Is justice.
Yeah, justice has been an important element.
So people have had to go, people have been charged,
there has been some community courts called gachacha. Mm-hmm. It's a traditional way of bringing a village together, and they try themselves. I mean, you accuse him and he just has to defend himself and so on. But it was on a national level, so some people think that it has gone very well. It has helped to sort out a million of people killed. That means almost a million of killers. So you can imagine to try a million of suspects. It has been tricky. So there were introduced elements of forgiveness, elements of reducing the charges, the duration of the charges, and so on. So, but I think it has gone well. It has. There may be some injustice. There may be some neighbor who wrongly accused for reasons of
vendettas or whatever.
Of vendetta and so on. But in general, it has helped Rwanda to, let's say, to turn the page and look forward.
And just sort of to bring towards to an end. Now, see, I still haven't asked you because I've wondered if it's awful. Are you Hutu or Tutsi?
I'm a Hutu.
You're Hutu?
I'm a Hutu, yeah.
Right. And so do you have Tutsi friends and everything now? I mean, is that sort of, you know...
Definitely.
Yes, you've genuinely moved.
I have had Tutsi friends before the genocide and after.
Were you here all through or did you go away to study?
No, I'm lucky I was away.
You were away?
I was away for master's study. Right. For 2 years. The 2 years where the genocide happened in 94. So I was from 93 to 95, I was away for master's studies. Can you imagine how lucky I am?
You are, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not alone. I mean, I kept my friends from before and after. We always say he in Rwanda, when you say before or after. So the history is divided into...
Before and after.
Yeah.
So if I came back in 5 years' time, what would you like to be solved? Let me put it like that.
What are the challenges?
Mm.
Well, I don't know if we are on track in terms of alleviating poverty. I'm not sure if we are on track. And the economic reconstruction is being driven mainly from above. From the president and the government, it's not necessarily owned by the people. So I'm anxious about the sustainability of what you are doing today. And if I'm right, that means it may create some elements of resentment among the people and bring back some elements of ethnic differences and so on. But not in 5 years. In 15 years.
Hmm.
Let's say in 15 years. I don't want to...
Let's put it into the never-never, will we?
When I will no longer be there.
That's right. Well, Apollinaire, thank you very, very much indeed for talking to us.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That was a pleasure for me.
And that's Apollinaire Mushinzimana, who's a senator, and speaking there in his second language, English, because it was a Belgian colony and they all learn French. And now English is mandated as the language to learn, but you hear a great deal of French when you're there. Now I'd like you to meet a man called Arthur Asimwe. Arthur is the Director General of the Rwandan Broadcasting Agency. He's a former Reuters man. He was trained as a correspondent for Reuters. He's come back to take up this vital role because the press itself played an egregious part, as you'll hear. So how does he see the role of the media in this rebuild that Apollinaire was describing?
I think the press has to play a very big role in terms of building the new Rwanda. And because the press also had a very big role in destroying the old Rwanda.
How?
1994 genocide, the press played a very key role. We had radio stations here that were owned by politicians, including even the national radio, that were fueling and funding the killings, that were the epicenter for this disseminating harmful hatred propaganda, that were the medium for sowing seeds of division amongst the people. We had even some print newspapers here that were publishing stories that were basically
inciting
people to kill each other. And our very own radio station here was one of the key stations that was inciting the masses to kill each other. So the media played a very significant role in inciting and making sure the killings happened. So after the genocide of 1994, I think it's equally important that we clean up the mess.
Is there a guilt in members of the media about this?
Oh, yes, there's a guilt because we played a very big role in terms of ensuring that this happened, that genocide happened. So, but after this also, we also say that it's important that we clean up the mess and help in building the new Rwanda, building a new society where everyone feels at peace with each other, everyone moves about their daily lives without any fear of anything. And so for us here at the Rwanda Broadcasting Agency, our preoccupation is to ensure that we have programming that builds the minds and hearts of Rwandans, promotes unity and reconciliation, ensures that, you know, we educate our masses on not necessarily forgetting the past. Yes, you can. The past is important to hold on to. History is important to keep. But we keep the history for lessons to ensure that as we move forward, we are moving together as one nation, as one people, and building our lives and making sure that the Rwanda of tomorrow is a peaceful Rwanda, a Rwanda that everybody enjoys.
Do you ever talk about awful things then? I mean, what happens if there are things happening in the community that need to be discussed?
Oh, yes, we discuss that, as long as there are no issues of saying you are white, I'm black, and, you know, I should hate you because you're white, or you should hate me because I'm black. Those that issues that bring any sort of divisions.
What about, say, crime wave and any crime?
No, crime, of course, that is news. That is something
reported. But if there are more of one particular group than another, I mean, this is something that happens in Australia.
Fortunately, we've not had that because we've had peaceful coexistence for now. We've not really had that one ethnic group is attacking another because of this. I think Rwandans have also learned a lesson. I mean, the genocide is a huge, terrible thing that happened to us, so it's a big lesson. Once in a while, you'll get some people come up and, you know, throw out some bad words that could incite or that could sow seeds of division among its population. But that one we expose and we condemn, because there's no way we can accept this country to go back to where it was.
And does this come up to you as Director General? Like, have you had big dilemmas as to whether you publish or, you know, whether you...
Oh, yes. I mean, the story on anything around ethnic tensions, we'll have to discuss at length and say, how do we cover this or how do we deal with this issue that has come up. But I can say, fortunately, we have 23 years down the road, these kind of stories keep diminishing and less and less.
So has it made some journalists too timid?
Oh yes. Some journalists have do censor themselves, which is not really good, or become timid and are not bold enough to ask questions. Some journalists were not bold enough to go and stand before politicians and ask tough questions because, like I said, you know. Way back before the genocide, yeah, respect for authority was very huge, that you don't have to question authority. So breaking that culture and ensuring that people are able to, you know, debate, carry out open debates and question where things are wrong.
This is very interesting. So you're saying, are you, that in fact the old Rwanda was too submissive and that this partly contributed to
I mean, a village chief would stand and say something and the entire village, that becomes a law. So if I'm head of a village somewhere, I'll say, you know, pick up your machetes, go and kill this group of people. It becomes law. So the respect for authority was really high. And that's why partly the genocide happened. So breaking up this culture is not a sudden or a one-night job. It's something that really is gradual.
It's a process.
It's a process. But fortunately, I think for the past 23 years, they've been building systems, building institutions, and I can tell you that Rwanda is on the right path.
So I mean, actually, you've got a really tricky dance, haven't you? Because you've got to both encourage people to be more sceptical and think for themselves, but not do it in such a way that threatens the cohesion of the community.
Yeah, it's a balance that you have to do. It's a balance that you have to do because, I mean, social cohesion is important. People have to, community has to live at peace. So whatever that you think might bring about any divisions, or that must be fought. And even we as journalists are cautious about that. We need to make sure that that in our programming, we're mindful about the need to keep this society as one. They need to ensure that what caused the genocide does not repeat itself again. And like I said, because the media is a very important tool in terms of educating people, informing people, it becomes central to us to ensure that, you know, this role that we're playing is
constructive.
Constructive.
Does any of it keep you awake at night, as they say? Does it worry you, or are you quite confident that you have got the balance right?
I would say maybe 5 years ago I'd get worried. I would think about so many things, but it's now things are up in good shape. That everybody understands now that everyone wants to move on. Everyone wants to progress in their lives. That and thanks to the leadership of today, because I mean, at least Rwandans have hope for the future. So even us within the institution here, you find that the young leaders or young managers here understand where we're supposed to be headed and driving it.
Well, congratulations, and what a fabulous, fabulous project for you and challenge.
Thank you so much.
That's Arthur Asimwe, a very impressive man, Director General of the Rwanda Broadcasting Agency, RBA, and one with a task ahead of him.